Court of Appeals is now in session. Judges Cleaver, Johnson, Yorkman, the Honorable Randall J. Schleter presiding.
Good morning. The next matter on our oral calendar is the Blue Earth County Proceeding A-19-0608, State of Minnesota versus Payam and Nadapur. And are both counsel present in, let's see, we have one counsel, the appellant's counsel in Blue Earth County, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You may have to talk just a bit more, and then that our screen will actually jump to you.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. William Sorkin, formerly Jeffrey Sorkin, admitted pro hoc vitae for appellants.
Okay, thank you. And I think I briefly saw counsel for the respondent from Clay County. Is that who I saw there a moment ago?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, thank you. And each counsel, as you're aware, will have 15 minutes for your presentation, up to 15. Appellant will have 5 minutes for additional rebuttal, if you wish. And so we'll start with appellant. And if you are ready to proceed, counsel, you may.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
And if you, just one more time, if you'll identify yourself for the record, please.
William Sorkin, formerly Jeffrey Sorkin, admitted pro hoc vitae for appellants.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the fundamental issue here relates to mental competency and the ability to represent oneself. I would point out first that Minnesota law prior to Godinez v. Moran was very clear that Minnesota required a heightened standard for a defendant to represent themselves. I would further point out that as the Supreme Court made clear in Indiana v. Edwards, there is no federal requirement that there not be a heightened standard. And I would emphasize that the case wherein Minnesota went to that lower standard, State v. Thornton, was explicitly based off the assumption that Godinez v. Moran did not allow states to go higher, whereas Minnesota has never, absent that mistaken belief of the holding of Godinez v. Moran, Minnesota has never said that there's not the heightened requirement. In fact, when not basing on a misunderstanding of U.S. Supreme Court precedent, Minnesota instead made multiple decisions, State v. Bauer and State v. Gissendaner, that both made it clear Minnesota's requirement of the heightened standard. And I'll point out...
Mr. Sorkin,
yes.
Before you go further, let me just... I just want to clarify the issue, because your client expressed his desire to waive his right to counsel and represent himself, and he did give a waiver, and the district court found that it was a valid waiver, correct? And so, I think isn't it more accurate to say? And then there are cases where the district court rules otherwise, and then on appeal, the defendant argues that he was denied his right to self-representation. But here, I think what you're arguing is he was denied his right to counsel, or he was because he did not give a valid waiver of his right to counsel. Is that accurate, do you think, the way I'm framing that issue?
In part, I would say that it goes deeper than merely the validity of the waiver, and it goes to fundamental competency, the competency required to represent oneself, which Minnesota, with the exception of following.
Okay, stop. Let me stop you again. We have some delay here, of course. It's inherent in our ITV system. But when you say competency to represent oneself, that could be understood to mean, you know, his performance as an advocate in the courtroom and so on. And isn't it really about his competency to make the decision to waive counsel, right? And isn't that really just baked into the question of whether the waiver is knowing and intelligent?
Well, I would say it can be, but I would say it goes further that while no while knowing and intelligent is one standard, but competency is another, I would call it considered a separate stand, or a slightly separate standard. They're fundamentally the same issue, but I think there's different facts underpinning, I suppose, would be the best way to describe it. So what I would fundamentally point out is the similarities between this case and Bauer, most notably that appellant in this case. He wasn't on his medication. The court knew he needed to be on medication. And similar to Bauer, there was a fundamental issue of his very understanding of the charges against him. I would point out that, yes.
You've referenced the Bauer case. First, just to clarify, there's no issue raised that for Rule 20 purposes to proceed to trial, all of the evidence in the record shows that he's competent.
Before you do, I apologize, but that's
not the heart of my question. I just wanted to clarify that. But is it not true that the Camacho case from 1997, which essentially joined the Thornblad decision, which is a published case of this court, that essentially the state of Minnesota law right now is that the standard, therefore, for representing oneself is the same as competency to proceed to trial, therefore Bauer would no longer direct this court our decision today?
I would point out, Your Honor, the issue as it goes to Indiana v. Edwards and how that case relates to Thornblad and Camacho. Most notably that in Thornblad and Camacho, there was an understanding that the U.S. Supreme Court required that there not be the heightened standards set forth in Bauer.
Doesn't it make a difference? I understand your implicit argument is that this court should reverse its decision in Thornblad based on the fact that Edwards has come down and what Edwards says. But Camacho is a decision of our Supreme Court. Are we really in a position to reverse that based on Edwards? Or not follow Camacho based on Edwards?
I would say yes, because the U.S. Supreme Court, by stating that the holding in Godinez v. Moran was misunderstood, in effect reversing Godinez v. Moran, that the authority underpinning Camacho has been reversed by a higher court, the U.S. Supreme Court. I would also point out that even if this court were to say that there isn't a higher requirement, that looking to the facts of this case, there still was a lack of competency at that point that had not existed earlier. An issue brought up in both Bauer and in State v. Rose. Most notably that at the earlier omnibus hearing, it was noted that he was on medication. An expert stated that he needed to be on medication. However, at the hearing when he asked to represent himself, he wasn't on his medication. He in fact stated that he didn't remember whether he needed medication, but he wasn't taking it. The court, having known that he needed medication, the court, having been told that he needed medication, didn't inquire further about why he wasn't taking his medication.
Couldn't this court just say, if we agree with you, that the decision to represent himself in this trial was not intelligent?
He didn't fully understand what he was being charged with. He didn't seem to understand whether he was being charged with attempted first-degree murder or first-degree murder. And he felt that his attorneys were trying to hide the fact whether he was being charged with murder or attempted murder from him, showing a level of paranoia that goes beyond. I don't think my attorney has my best interest, so upon concern, and instead shows that fundamental paranoia that his condition had, that paranoia that was the reason why he needed to be on medication in the first place. And I would further point out that the district court actually said his waiver was intelligent. It said it couldn't find his waiver intelligent, but that shouldn't matter. But that does matter. It's the fundamental of the law that his waiver must be intelligent, and his waiver must be intelligent.
My review of Dr. Reitman's report, again, his opinion with regard to Rule 2001 in his report makes no reference to medication. I see there is medication referenced elsewhere in his report, but simply answering the question whether defendant lacks sufficient ability to consult with a reasonable degree of rational understanding with defense counsel, he said, it is my opinion that Mr. Nadebohr basically has the capacity to assist in his own defense. He knew the role of the judge to determine guilt or innocence. He knew the role of defense attorney to prove that he is not guilty. He knew the role of the prosecutor to prove that he is guilty. My question is then, again, if we are to use the same standard, how would the court, or this court, conclude from that report, along with two others, and one more recently that same year, as I recall, in 2018, that he's competent to proceed to trial? Are you indicating that solely because of the reference to he could not recall if he should be on medication means that we should reverse because the court abuses discretion in finding him competent to waive, to represent himself?
There's also the level of paranoia he showed at the time of the hearing. There's also the fact that even during his trial, there's a point where he just walked out of the court where he was done objecting, he was done defending because of his paranoia regarding redaction, minutes missing from his statements. Looking at the hearing, starting with when he said he wanted to represent himself, when he wasn't on his medication, he showed a clear fundamental lack of competency, a paranoia about the world out to get him that goes beyond simply being a defendant in a trial. And I would also point out with regards to the medication that Dr. Reitman testified that appellant was on medication at the time of his assessment, that his finding that he was competent to stand trial was based off of his condition at the time of his assessment. He also pointed out that appellant didn't want to take his medication, and I would go towards the fundamental importance of him taking his medication. And the significance, and I would say this goes to an issue in both Bauer and Rose, is that the court had knowledge that he was supposed to be medicated. The court had knowledge that he was only found competent while medicated, and the court still did not inquire further about what he meant by he wasn't taking his medication. He didn't really remember if he needed it. The court didn't take fundamental necessary steps to ensure his competence, the intelligence of his waiver, and the knowledge of his waiver.
Mr. Sorkin, just to clarify a comment you just made, is it true there's no finding by a court that he's only competent if taking medications? You're referring to that one statement in one of the three medical opinions, but there's never, in fact, I think the judge twice made findings, once as recent as the pretrial, the omnibus hearing, and then once in July of the following year when there was to be a contested competency hearing, that based on all those reports that he's competent to proceed to trial. There was no qualification, in other words, by that ruling, nor objection to that ruling.
That is correct. However, I would again point out that at every report done, he was medicated. And the significance here goes to Rhodes. In Rhodes, the court made it clear, when there's a change in circumstances, The court must inquire further. Here, there was a fundamental change in circumstances. He stopped taking his medication. Could the court have found that he was competent even without medication? Could the court have found that? Hypothetically, yes, but the court was required under Rhodes to inquire, to do something more than take appellant saying he didn't remember if he needed to take medication anymore at face value and do nothing further on the issue. Under Rhodes, the court was required to at least, if nothing else, inquire, do anything beyond simply taking what the appellant said at face value and then saying, well, your waiver probably was intelligent, but I don't need to worry about whether it was intelligent. I'm going to find your competence to represent yourself. That goes against the fundamentals of the law, and it goes against the fundamentals of what the law requires, and the court did not do what it was required to do. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have a chance in rebuttal then once the respondent counsel is completed. And counsel for respondent, as soon as you are ready, you may respond.
Thank you. My name is Pamela Foss. I represent the respondent in this case, the state of Minnesota. I was also the trial attorney on this case. In response to some of the comments made by the court, I would agree with the court that there were three evaluations done of Mr. Nadiapour. All three of them found him competent, with no mention that he had to be medicated in order to achieve that competency. So when the court made that decision that he was competent to proceed without his counsel, it was based on three reports and his actual presentation to the court.
But isn't there something to Dr. Reitman, sort of implicit in the circumstances he was evaluating, was the fact that the appellant was taking medications to deal with his situation that were part of why he was able to understand and participate in his defense?
I believe that was part of the 2002 evaluation. I don't recall that there was anything in the 2001 that said he needed to be medicated he was on medications at one point. I don't quite honestly know if he was medicated during the other evaluations where he was also found competent. And we had two competing doctors as to the 2002 issue. So we had one doctor that even said that there was no 2002 issue as well, whether he's medicated or not. So when we talk about the competency, which I agree with the court when you talk about the Comanche case, which indicates competency to either waive your counsel or be competent to proceed at trial is the same thing. If there's the heightened standard that the appellant argues, I don't believe is the law as it sits in Minnesota right now.
Is it significant that Camacho involved a case where the Rule 20 evaluator specifically indicated that he believed Camacho was competent to understand and waive his constitutional rights and would be eligible to represent himself? I mean, we don't have those sort of opinions from the experts here, do we?
No, and quite honestly, they weren't asked that question. So how they would have responded to that question, I guess I don't know, but there was never put to them, could he represent himself? But he was competent in the proceedings, and I think when he waived counsel, the court extensively questioned him. It was probably a 45-minute hearing, almost an hour, of questioning over and over to assess whether or not he was knowing, intelligently waiving his right, if he knew what was going on. And sitting in the courtroom, Mr. Nadiapour was coherent, he was articulate, he expressed himself, he was responsive to questions. There was nothing to indicate on that date that there was any doubt of his competency at that point.
But separate from the issue of competence, I mean, Rule 504 makes it very clear in the case law that, you know, if a party is going to waive any constitutional right, the district court is required to find that that waiver is voluntary, intelligent, and knowing. And here we have a district court specifically stating, fortunately, I don't have to make a finding that those waivers are intelligent. Why wouldn't we take the district court at its word and say, you know what, it needs to have a chance to revisit the question of intelligence? Because it didn't make a finding.
And, she did make that finding, and it was unfortunate the words that she was using is in the context of what was going on at the hearing, and her tone, her voice, and her attitude was basically, nobody that represents themselves in an attempted murder case is doing so intelligently. But I think when you look at the responses and the questions and the waivers that he filled out, implicitly, it was an intelligent waiver. I mean,
Is it intelligent when he indicates in his waiver that he has no psychological disabilities that affect his ability to understand, when she in fact knows that there is a real question about his competency, or not, maybe not competency under 2001, but broader questions of competency under, or ability to understand what he's doing under 2001? I mean, shouldn't that waiver in itself have that indication in the waiver form been a red flag to the district court, that this might not be intelligent?
Given the circumstances of Mr. Nadipour, I don't think so, because we, like I said, we have two competing doctors talking about whether or not there was any psychological issues. Mr. Nadipour, throughout the proceedings, never demonstrated that there were any psychological issues. I understand that the evaluator hired by his attorneys came to that conclusion, but there was nothing. Given the repeated hearings, and Judge Lawson was the district court judge in all the, his appearances, she had seen him on numerous occasions throughout the almost 2 years that this case was pending, to show that there was any psychological issues at the time that that waiver was signed or he waived his rights. But Mr. Nadipour, I mean, to support the district court's finding, is he did represent himself, and he represented his, he did an opening statement, he argued motions. Did he walk out of the courtroom when he didn't agree with the court's ruling at one point? He did. That wasn't in front of a jury, and it was more frustration than anything else. And would an attorney do that? No. Would someone pro se representing themselves that were frustrated with the court system do it? Yes, they could, and but that doesn't mean that they're somehow incompetent to represent themselves, because he did come back in and he continued to present his case, and he questioned witnesses and he provided a closing argument to the jury. So he represented himself competently during the trial. At no point during the trial was there any indication to the court that there wasn't a competent pro se defendant sitting in front of her.
Ms. Voss, was there something in the record that would show, I was a little curious because of the timing, there was the first two doctors with the Rule 2001 and 2002 opinions, and then I believe it was March or April of the following year, 2018, when defense renewed a request for a competency evaluation. So then we received the third, and then there's a contested hearing at which defense counsel withdrew their motion and no one objected to a finding of his competency. Was there some evidence in the record, either related to medication or his condition, that was fluctuating from the start of the case to that point?
I believe at the point where they ordered the third one, he was asking to discharge his attorneys and wouldn't talk to them. He was frustrated with them. He didn't feel that they were communicating with him, and he wanted to represent himself. So at that point, his attorneys then said he was incompetent because he wasn't assisting in his defense. So that, I think that was why the third one was ordered.
So related more to the 2001 issue, although somewhat consistent with what he ultimately decided to do then in October of that same year.
Correct.
And the same judge presided through, as you said, all those proceedings.
Yes. Yes, after the initial omnibus hearing, that's when we assign the district court judge, and then they sit through all of those hearings. So it would have been the same judge through all the hearings. But if you don't have any other questions, I guess I don't have anything else other than what's been briefed for the court already.
Very well. No further questions. Thank you, Ms. Voss.
Thank you.
And counsel for appellant, do you wish to provide a response?
Yes, briefly, Your Honor. Your Honor, what's before the court is the record. What's not before the court
The court made a ruling. That ruling was, I don't need to find this waiver to be intelligent. That counsel thought the judge was sounding flippant throughout flippant when making that type that remark is irrelevant. What is relevant is what the judge said, what the judge ruled. The judge ruled, the district court ruled, she didn't need to make a finding that his waiver was intelligent. There, it is a fundamental requirement when giving up a constitutional right that the waiver be intelligent. I would further point out that while county counsel talks about the length of the hearing, she doesn't talk about the substance of the hearing. The substance of I'm not taking my medication. The substance I think my attorneys are out to get me because I got something from Homeland Security saying I've been convicted of first degree murder. So what does it matter? What is at issue is whether he was competent and whether his waiver was knowing and intelligent. The court said it couldn't find his waiver to be intelligent. The court never found his waiver to be intelligent.
But in context, I mean, can't you also read the district court's, I mean, a statement on the record, not in an order, on the record at the end of a long hearing to basically say, boy, in a case like this, I don't know how anyone's decision to represent themselves would be intelligent.
I think you can, but I would say that what matters is the language, is the fact that the court didn't find the intelligence. That, to me, is what it comes down to, is the fact that he expressed throughout that long hearing paranoia and a lack of understanding of fundamental issues. I would further point out just in regards to one comment with regards to he kept representing himself after he walked out and came back in. When he came back in, he said, and I quote, "I'm done objecting." I would say there's a fundamental aspect to that. I would further point out the significance when it comes to whether his waiver was intelligent and his understanding of the proceedings. The main reason why he said he wanted to represent himself was he wanted a normal trial like everyone else. He didn't realize that meant waiving his mental health defense until the beginning of trial, when the court again explained to him that he would be giving up his mental health defense if he didn't have a bifurcated trial. The lack of understanding, the fundamental paranoia, lack of understanding of what was going on around him makes it clear what the circumstances were, that his waiver simply wasn't intelligent. As the judge said, they couldn't find. Thank you. Unless you have any further questions, that's all.
No further questions. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your comments today as well as the written briefs, and we will take the matter under advisement, issue a ruling. Have a good day.